Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, our second show today on October 20th, 2021. It's a pleasure to have my good friends from the National Council for the Social Studies here today. Of course, Larry Pask is here, the executive director, and a first-time guest, Anton Schulsky, who's the new president of NCSS, and I welcome him live, and I bring him on in just a couple of seconds. We're going to talk about the upcoming conference, what's going on with social studies this year. As I always say, now more important than ever. All right, civic discourse, it really, really matters. We're going to have a nice conversation about all of that and the role of social studies in K-12 education as seen through the eyes of NCSS, socialstudies.org, the National Council for Social Studies. We're going to archive the show over at ACE.org. That's the home website of our Consortium for Equity in Education. Our magazine over there, it's excellent. Flip through it, read it. It's really got great articles. It's called Equity in Access. It's an online journal over at ACE.ed.org. All of our podcasts are over there. You'll see the link over there, as well as a link to our new website, which is all about social emotional learning, which is called SEL Today. That's actually at seltoday.org. It's a new website. It's growing. Thank you, everybody, those of you who have visited. And just check it out, constant news feed. We're trying to keep you up to date as it grows and grows and grows about this whole thing with it. It's very important these days, social emotional learning. We decided to devote a website to it, and you'll see it and enjoy it over there. Please go over SEL Today and ace-ed.org, and of course NCSS or socialstudies.org. And Larry Pasca, welcome back, my friend. Other Larry.
Other Larry. Hello, Larry. It's good to hear from you again. How are you?
I'm just fine, as a matter of fact, on a beautiful fall day up here in Maine, and I trust it's nice where you are in New York, I assume?
I'm in Maryland. It is beautiful and sunny.
You are Maryland. Okay. What did I say?
Yeah.
New York. I don't know. Oh, I know why. I know why you said, because your cell phone address is New York. I know why.
Right.
Sorry about that. Lost track.
No, that's okay.
And all the way from the West Coast here to me in the East Coast. Okay, Anton, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Actually talking to you from the foot of Pikes Peak in Colorado Springs.
Wow, you know, I got a story about that. I flew into Colorado Springs one night, first time ever, and I think I stayed. There's a famous hotel. Is it the Antlers? Am I right?
There is the Antlers Hotel, that's located right downtown, actually.
Exactly. And the guy, this is a riot. The guy said, I remember it's nighttime, I flew in. The guy says it's a great, great, you'll love the room. And I went in and it was dark out. The next morning I woke up, I open up and there's a gorgeous mountain out there. And I walk downstairs and I say to the guy, I say, boy, that mountain's really gorgeous. Does it have a name? And he looked at me like I was completely nuts, and he said, that's Pikes Peak. Okay? So I didn't even know it. You know, it does have a name. It's Pikes Peak. I didn't even know it was there. It has to be somewhere. It's in Colorado Springs. You know?
It is. It is. Looks out over us every single day.
Yeah, it's, wow. Wow. Do you teach in the Colorado Springs School District?
I do. I teach in School District 11 is what it's called, and I actually teach in the high school that has its roots to the oldest school in Colorado Springs. Our first graduating class goes all the way back to 1879.
Oh, wow.
Where we graduated a grand total of 5 students
wow.
back then. So we've been part of the community, really since the founding of the city, which itself was founded back in 1871. So,
and, you know, now that I know you're at Colorado Springs, I just had on from the National Association for the Gifted, the guy who directs your, I'm pretty sure it's the same district, the guy who directs your gifted program. Who's that?
Well, let's see. Actually,
sorry.
It's a woman who directs
No, this is a guy.
In the Springs.
This is a guy, and he's down
guy.
In Colorado Springs. I'll try to figure it out while we're talking. I just can't remember his name offhand.
That's okay, because there's only, you know, we've got a population of close to 500,000 here in the spring.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, but at any rate, well, today we're going to talk about solidarity in the social studies, and congratulations, Mr. President. What's your presidential vision now that you're president of NCSS? And by the way, Larry did tell you about NCSS-1, the private aircraft, did he not? Sometimes he doesn't tell these presidents.
Yeah, no, yeah. He managed to keep that one secret from me.
You have access to it whenever you need it. NCSS-1. It's probably a it's probably a Colorado Springs airport right now, waiting for you.
It's just waiting.
We've got it fueled and ready for you to take off. So yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. So and of course, Secret Service protection 24/7. They told you all this, didn't they, when you became president?
I must have missed that memo.
All right, whatever. Any your presidential vision, Senor? Go ahead.
You know, it's interesting. I come to this really from the perspective of I'm a longtime classroom teacher, and you know, the theme actually of our conference is really the theme that I wanted to push forward in terms of you know, what I saw we needed to do in regards to social studies, and that was really, you know, in a lot of places people teach history like I do, or government like I do. Others are economics teachers and geography teachers. But then we also have those who are teaching, you know, psychology and sociology, in some cases business management, current events. We've got teachers who teach pop culture courses that are tied directly to social studies. And so for me, it was really this broad umbrella of really kind of bringing all of us together. Not only that, but it's also that broad reach and that broad vision of social studies, really from the early days, our preschool students and preschool teachers, all the way through our teacher candidates, those that are about to become the new generation of teachers. And so that was really the whole thing, was to really kind of bring everybody together. And that was long before some of this other stuff that has been in the news kind of reared its head.
Yeah, it's important. And, you know, and actually you make up a good point. I've always said this, and Larry's heard me say it a million times. Social studies for a long time, I don't like it, but I sort of understand it. You know, STEM kind of became the big thing, et cetera, et cetera. But if you forget social studies, all right, then what happens? Science doesn't matter unless it pertains to society, as an example, okay? Nobody creates a vaccine and then keeps it a secret, all right? It's done for the sake of society, and that word society goes right into social studies. And we have to understand the impact of everything on society. That's why we do it. So that interdisciplinary part of what we do as social studies teachers is so important. That's really what you're saying. Even within social studies, if I'm reading this correctly, it has to be interdisciplinary within the social studies, and then it makes a whole big difference. Did I get it right, Mr. President?
Yes, I think you did. I mean, you know, I can't teach a course in government without looking at, you know, the impact of historical events in the formation of government. Or I can't look at government and not talk about the impact of economics.
Exactly.
You know, in terms of like tax policy and those kinds of things. And you know, I've always said, you know, if it wasn't for the social studies teachers, nobody would really know about the impact of, say, a Newton or an Einstein. Or
that's exactly right.
Because somebody's got to be there to tell the stories.
Exactly right. And you know, the theme of the upcoming conference in November for NCSS is solidarity in the social studies, and that's what we've got to bring this all together. Mr. Executive Director, your thoughts on this, Dr. Paska. I almost called you Mr.
Well, no, that's fine. So it's this is a very I think this is a very timely moment for us to really talk about the notion of what it means to have solidarity together. And what is that, you know, as we've seen in the media over the past few months, there's been this massive push to try to understand what's being taught in a social studies classroom. There is a great deal of misinformation about what's being taught in a social studies classroom. we keep saying that we would love to see that social studies was taught every day K through 12. So although we are humbled to hear that apparently it is, we know that the reality is it's often not. And when it is definitely not taught through the lens of critical race theory or, you know, other
exactly.
other approaches to teaching and learning that are about dividing people. I mean, look, every educator comes to a classroom with a love of learning, a love of students, helping them reach their fullest potential. We take our professional responsibilities seriously. We also use our professional judgment and training. And just as a reminder, too, many educators are advanced degreed. They have masters and doctorates. They've done fellowships and study around the world. So just as doctors and lawyers and other professionals, healthcare providers, you know, are constantly learning, so are educators. And so this notion that kids are walking into a classroom every day being told they are less than their full potential, that their backgrounds mean they're good or bad, that's just not happening. And so we really right now in solidarity are coming together to say, let's focus on what happens in a social studies classroom. The good news is it's a rich place for learning. It's a great place where kids explore the world around them and get ready for active civic life. And we also confront hard issues and talk about tough subjects, talk about tough concepts and themes as well, because that's part of learning. But, you know, right now I think coming together as we're doing this fall in solidarity and to say that let's really explore what the themes are in a social education. And let's also start to build the evidence that's showing what actually happens in a classroom, because we guarantee that for every time we hear a misrepresentation in the news about social studies, we also then need to ask community members, parents, others, just ask what your child is learning today in school.
Mm-hmm.
Find out what's happening. And chances are what you're going to learn is that kids are hopefully at best engaged in inquiry. And at the very least, they're not getting social studies, and we need to push and advocate for more social studies time.
Right. And they have to understand, we also have to create and share those strategies that work to overcome and these questions of misrepresentation, all right? You know, we don't have to all operate individually if I'm in Texas or North Dakota or Massachusetts, okay? If these questions come up, somebody's always figured out the strategy to overcome the situation and make people understand. And that's the goal of getting everybody together at the conference, which is in November, by the way. And I think it's all virtual, right, Lair? All virtual?
Yes, we are all virtual this year.
Okay, and it's November 15th to the 21st. I want to talk about this in detail before we go further on this. Anton, I'm going to ask you to join in, too. It's the 101st, happy centennial, 1+1, National Council of Social Studies Annual Conference, Solidarity in Social Studies, November 15th to the 21st. You have some big speakers. And one of my favorites is going to be, and talk about this, is Stevie Van Zandt, okay, from Bruce Springsteen, the E String Band, from The Sopranos, obviously. Okay, how'd you land Stevie Van Zandt, and who are the others? Lair?
Well, yeah.
Oh, I'll go ahead and jump in.
Oh, Anton, who wants to do this one? Anton,
I'll pick this one. So, a couple of things. First of all, the theme of solidarity in social studies was born really out of a couple of things that had come together. Not only was my vision, but the vision itself was informed by a couple of events in my own past. When I was a young college student was the time when the Solidarity Movement or Solidarnosc was getting started in Poland. And so that movement certainly played a good deal of influence in terms of how I saw many things in regards to, you know, what was happening in Eastern Europe at the time and those kind of things. And the other thing, quite honestly, is Steve Van Zandt's second album, which was called Voice of America, has a song on it called Solidarity. I've been a big Steve Van Zandt fan.
Everybody is
certainly going back not only to his time with E Street, but also with a group that he helped form, because I am from New Jersey originally, called Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes. So I got to give a little love to that. But in his
I remember
song,
them. I'm from
his
Philly.
Song, oh, there yeah. you go. Okay.
There you go.
In his song Solidarity, he talks about why can't we walk on common ground, And what we need is solidarity. And to me, that was hugely important. So those were the kind of things that I was thinking about. And the fact of the matter is, one of the things that Steve has done over the years has been supported. He started something called the Rock and Roll Forever Foundation, which morphed into something called teachrock.org. .org has now well over 100 lesson plans that infuses the arts, specifically music and specifically rock music, into a wide variety of the curriculum. And so, a couple of years ago when I was fortunate enough to be elected and I knew that I was having this conference coming up, he, quite honestly, was number one on my list of people that I would love to speak at our conference. And we were fortunate enough. We were able to get through, a couple of things about it being, the situation that we are these days. Thankfully right now, both his band, the Disciples of Soul, and his other band, the E Street Band, are currently not touring, which is both bad and good. It's good for us because we have the opportunity to have him on board and have him as one of our speakers. And so that really, to me, was
really cool.
One area that I was kind of focused in on. Cool. The others that we're looking at, I think, are just, they speak to that broad spectrum in terms of what we're looking at. We were fortunate enough to just recently get Valerie Jarrett, who is a former top advisor to former President Obama. She's one of our keynote speakers. We also have Florent Groberg, who's a Medal of Honor winner. We've been graced in past to have Medal of Honor winners talk to our teachers about the importance of that. I think that's awesome. Alexis Coe, she wrote a book on the book was called "You Never Forget Your First," and it's a new biography of a more recent biography of George Washington. And in which case, what she also does is to kind of put to bed some of the myths and misperceptions that historians have had over the years. Since we were going to be in Minnesota, we were also very fortunate to have with us former Minnesota Supreme Court Justice Alan Page. And
Minnesota
Justice
Vikings,
Page,
an NFL Hall of Famer.
Yeah, exactly, right? To me, that's the quintessential, you talk about your scholar athlete, and in this particular case, the scholar is
I meant Minnesota Vikings. Did I say Minnesota Twins? I'm sorry, everybody. Think of baseball right now.
We're in that season, too. So, I think we've got a broad spectrum of folks who are going to be joining us. We also have some reporters from the Minneapolis Star Tribune who were on the ground covering the events of the George Floyd.
Floyd
murder and those kind of things. So it really is that broad spectrum of individuals that we were looking to bring into the conversations.
It sounds like a wonderful, wonderful conference. It's going to be just great. I know, and I don't know whether you know this, Anton, my wife Carolyn is always there, okay, because she's with PBS Learning Media. So she's looking forward to it. Every time she gets an email from somebody from the CSS, she screams upstairs, "You're not going to believe who the next speaker is." Okay, they just got. Okay.
We'll give a little, and I should remember, too, we're giving a little love to Erica Howard, who's joining us from Frontline.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much. Okay, so it's going to be really cool. And again, everybody, I assume there's unlimited admission, right? Unlimited number of people you can handle, right? Because it's virtual, right? How's this work?
Well, yeah. Right? I mean, I guess technically we can handle an unlimited number anytime. But we're going to miss being together in person this year. But the benefit to this and to being in a virtual space is that, every time you go to a conference, you're constantly missing sessions. You're picking and choosing the speakers you want to see and the other things you want to do. If you register, you have access to the pre-recorded sessions and content that's available through April 30th of next year. So you can stay
you
on
go.
For another five
Thank
months. I love to think of it as a conference that never ends because you don't have to pick and choose. I also just want to give a nod to our partners again. So this year when we were going to be in Minneapolis for our conference, we co-hosted with our state affiliate, which is the Minnesota Council for the Social Studies. They're still staying with us. They're putting on some special program. I think they're even doing an evening reception one night in the Twin Cities for members who are in that area. So again, we're grateful to still keep them as part of this, even though we're virtual. And then our American Bar Association's Division for Public Education, they do a law-related education conference. They're putting all those sessions in with ours.
Good.
So we're more than just one. We're really three events in one, if you think about it. So that's why we just encourage people. I know virtual is not always the easiest way to connect. Those of us that miss the in-person connections, at the same time, we do think that the benefit is if you couldn't get to us in person, there's no reason from the comfort and convenience of wherever you are that you can't participate, and you get to stay with us for months after the event is over.
And, of course, there's nothing more fun than going to a conference live and seeing everybody and shaking hands. But this also opens up the conference to people who maybe couldn't afford to go some other way. Not every school district has the budget to send somebody to Minneapolis. All right? But they can get on virtually and listen. So there's pros and cons, okay? And all in all, considering the speakers you have, and the programs you've put together, my wife will actually be doing a couple of sessions there, okay, so I can say for a fact how good they are, all right? It's going to be just great, okay, and I really like it. You know, Anton, you're a social studies teacher, and just talk from the trenches in Colorado Springs, and that's a fairly conservative town, okay? The Air Force Academy's there, et cetera, all right? What's life like teaching social studies these days in beautiful Colorado Springs?
It is, it's funny, we're dealing with a couple of students just outside my office who are having a tough day right now. So I apologize.
I hope their day gets better. I hope their day gets better.
Well, for them, I hope it gets better. It's been interesting. I live in the center of Colorado Springs, and my school district is in the center of Colorado Springs. As I said earlier, we're the oldest district around. To that end, I feel really fortunate in the fact that I teach in a school district that has embraced social studies for the most part across the grade levels. We could always do better, I'll be honest with you, in getting back to what Larry Pascal was talking about earlier in terms of, particularly in the elementary grade levels. I happen to work in a school where the social studies department is as rock solid as they come. The teachers work well together. They have each other's back. They're very student-centered, and they're not afraid to begin to have those hard conversations with students in regards to what's going on in the world today. Our school, for example, we're a pretty diverse group of students in terms of their backgrounds, in terms of their socioeconomic backgrounds. We're actually a school that has a free and reduced lunch program of well over 50% of our students qualify. So, but at the same time, the students that I teach in a program called the International Baccalaureate Program.
Sure, wonderful program.
Yeah, and so the kids I'm teaching this year, they're all slated to go to university or a gap year next year. And so I feel really fortunate in that respect. We started the year off actually talking about the 1619 project. We're in the midst right now of a unit on civil rights. I tend to try to also use the local stories, local history to kind of tell the national narrative. So we'll be dealing with some of the civil rights movements, particularly the Chicano civil rights movements. In Denver in the 1960s and 70s, Corky Gonzalez and a number of others.
Nice.
So in that respect, it's pretty good. At the same time, there are some local school districts around us that are still part of Colorado Springs, but we're different. We have a number of different independent school districts that have unfortunately gone down that route of passing anti-CRT mandates, despite the fact that CRT isn't being taught in the schools.
Are you talking about critical what's called critical race theory?
Yeah, we're talking about critical race theory.
That could also be culturally responsive teaching. I always worry about that CRT acronym. It's two things.
Right, exactly,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so
critical race,
we
yeah.
tend to critical race theory or sometimes it's also if they don't mention that they'll talk about divisive concepts, right? We don't want our students learning about divisive concepts because
mm-hmm.
somehow or another they're all flat, they're all fragile flowers. What I found is that teachers, the best teachers, are going to address the students that they have in front of them, and they're going to do what's best for the student. It's age appropriate. They're going to have those hard conversations because the students are going to ask why. They're going to, we've raised them to ask questions, and one of the best things about it. Is I think that the stronger teachers are the ones who are pointing students in the direction to here's some sources, here are some readings, here's some information. You start to learn to ask questions of what it is that you read, what it is that you hear, and be able to draw those connections for yourself and come to some conclusions on your own. I know very few teachers who, use this as a political grandstanding kind of a thing. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen, right? But at the same time, there's a lot of misinformation that goes on out there. I think that's what teachers are dealing with. I think, quite honestly, our elected officials are making a lot of hay out of something that really doesn't need to be made hay
that's
of.
Right. Sure.
And
agreed.
But I mean, in some respects, we've always, social studies has always been one of those controversial topics. When if you mention one thing but leave something else out, someone's gonna feel like they've been slighted, and that's not the point, right? The point is that it's hard to cover a huge swath of any topic with any kind of depth. And remember too. I see my students one period a day out of six or seven or eight periods a day.
Right.
They've got a lot of other things going on as well. So,
they do. They do. And you're right. And this the whole thing, critical race theory. I mean, to me, we kind of always taught this stuff anyway. Okay. Now it has a name, and the name suddenly becomes controversial. All right. Just let the kids. If you just leave the kids to learn on their own. Okay, and facilitate learning, it'll all play out in the end. Okay, and that's exactly the way I look at it all. And it's just a shame we have to put up with all this stuff from people who get bad information all the time. All right, and if they just quietly ask the right questions, we'd be in much better shape. Yes.
Well, and I think the other I would agree. The other thing it was as I'm I have urged people that I've talked to. I was out doing some canvassing over the last couple of weeks for our local school board election. And one of the things I was telling people, if you have questions, go talk to the teachers, right?
Exactly.
Go find out what's actually going on inside the classroom because you'd be amazed to find out, first of all, what great instruction is going on. And secondly, the stuff that you hear on the news is not occurring in our classrooms.
And you'd also be amazed to find out, everybody, how smart your kids are. They're not
oh
stupid.
Oh, my God,
they're,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The role of a teacher, I always say this, and Larry, you've heard me say this, the profession is misnamed. The word teacher just has to do with us. The actual thing we do is we facilitate learning. We are learning facilitators. Okay, if the kids aren't learning, you're not teaching. It's all about the learning. The kids are learning, believe me. If we show them the way to learn, they will learn, and they'll learn on their own. It's to me, it's pretty obvious, but I do this every day, and what can I tell you? All that said, politics in there and all that, I'll ask Larry Paska, the legislative priorities this year for NCSS, all the money coming down, all this stuff, what's going on? Blair, what do you see as the role of legislation, which you guys do, besides the classroom work? What do you see that way?
Yeah, so the funny thing is right at a time when there seems to be this very public misinformation around what teachers are doing and trying to silence teachers and students' voices in the classroom, you actually have some profound things happening. We're tracking a major piece of proposed legislation that's been introduced in Congress, likely to be reintroduced, called the Civic Secures Democracy Act. It would represent, it's a bipartisan proposal with many co-sponsors right now that would put forth $5 billion, with a B,
Ooh.
Dollars
wow.
of appropriations for history and civics education. Everything from
wow.
teacher professional development to studying best practices to funds directly to districts and states to actually calling for the National Assessments of Educational Progress, the NAEP assessments, to be in history and civics grades 4, 8, and 12. So, you know, professional development research, this is a massive investment. And if Congress funds this, what we would be seeing is, you know, again, what would it take to really provide appropriate civic engagement for all kids? This is a start. And what I would hope to see happen in states is that states would follow, state legislatures might follow with their own funding proposals to say, you know, if Congress is authorizing funds for history and civic education, what can we do at a state level? And so there could be a positive trickle-down effect. There are other proposals for civics-related bills as well we're tracking. We are a member of a coalition called Title IVA, which is funding for professional learning and other supports for schools. So we fight for and continue to fight for appropriate resources for educators to do their jobs for kids. So what we would love to see then in advocacy is less about what teachers shouldn't do and the trouble they'll get in if they do it, and more focus on how do we help schools, which last year did a massive repositioning overnight to be virtual with no resources or support to do that.
Yeah.
How do we help them as we continue to progress through the pandemic? How do we help structure a school environment where teachers have better resources that are both digital and in person, that they have the training they need to support kids, that kids have access to the equitable access to the programs that they need? I'd love us, so NCSS, we want to shift the conversation from how do we punish you for doing bad, and instead how do we resource you through funding and opportunities so that you can equitably provide access to high-quality social studies for the kids. We just need to move the conversation back to that point because we are still grappling with the pandemic. We are still grappling with resource issues in schools. And what I don't always hear about the conversation around around education in general right now is we're not leading with a love of learning. We're not leading with a love of what kids can do, what teachers
right.
can do when they're empowered. We're leading from this kind of fear mindset. And I'll just say one more thing to this, too, which is if you look at what state standards are for social studies disciplines, states that have assessments in social studies, the NAEP assessments is another example, AP, IB, you know, Anton mentioned IB before.
Yeah.
All of these assessments, you know, when we're talking about things like civil rights and the history of civil rights, the history of different social and political issues in our country's history, in world history, you cannot meet those standards. You cannot meet those expectations for learning without confronting the different perspectives that have shaped those. So how do you talk about the civil rights era without unpacking the institution of slavery and its impact on American society, on world society? It's like being invited to someone's house for dinner and being told these are the things you can't talk about. Now let's go have a nice conversation.
Exactly.
It just doesn't happen. And,
exactly.
And so we want to make sure that as educators who are proponents of valuing inclusion every day, including multiple voices, multiple perspectives, including voices that haven't always been at the front seat of the table to share in the story and share their story with others. The lunacy to us of we're going to silence certain stories because we can't hear them, that won't achieve state standards and expectations. So I know that's a whole mouthful, Larry, but it's just to say that top of advocating and we want to see our congressional leaders fund history and civics. We hope they do. We also want your help as a public, as someone who's listening today, to please help us turn the message around from how we punish and restrict educators and kids to how we support educators and support kids in their learning.
From your lips to the good Lord's ears, as they like to say. All right. I wish people would do that. You know, all that stuff. You know, Anton talked about how important social studies is in his district, which I think is wonderful, okay, and a testament to great administration. I just ask, Larry, maybe you can fill this in too, Anton, as you talk to your colleagues. What are you hearing about the role of social studies, okay, in school districts across the country, just kind of anecdotally? Are you hearing good or bad or neutral? What are you hearing? I'll ask Larry, then I'll ask Anton if he can add to that.
Well, I'm going to go back to a couple of years ago when the NAEP results came out a few years ago. There was a study about the impact of social studies on reading comprehension. So disciplines with content like social studies, science, when you introduce those at an early age, when they're part of the elementary curriculum every day, kids develop stronger reading comprehension and then will be more successful on tests of literacy. I see that even just with my own kids. If they're coming home with activities about how do you tell multiple perspectives from a reading passage, when it's anchored in content, like how do you tell multiple perspectives from this passage about, a branch of government and how it functions, it's there. They're mastering the content. They're able to process and unpack the reading strategies that they're being asked to do. So, what I'm seeing, I think there is an acknowledgement that disciplines like social studies very much matter for building a foundation of literacy, building a foundation for critical thinking, for inquiry. But
yeah,
then,
agreed.
Both because of COVID right now and also because of other pressures in the school, and also I think the willingness of, instructional leaders and the school leaders to just really say, hey, how is social studies being taught right now? Is this really an instructional priority for us? I'm not hearing that question get asked systemically as much yet. Again, I'm hopeful that legislation like the Civic Secures Democracy Act and others will foster that conversation. Because
yeah,
if the
exactly.
school says they might get a massive grant for civics, they may ask, well, what is our program like right now?
Well, Anton, I'm going to add to that at all. What are you hearing through Colorado?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's a couple of things. Because I think the other thing, and this actually goes to something you were talking about at the top of the show, are those kind of social-emotional kinds of things. So in some respects,
yeah.
we sometimes refer to this as the soft skills, right? And I think about my eldest daughter who started teaching in the fall of 2019.
Oh, wow.
Great year to start teaching, right? Because then,
yeah.
a couple months later,
yeah.
we've moved
Boom.
To. Exactly. But she's a preschool teacher within our school district. So she's
nice.
A licensed a full-time licensed teacher. Went to the university to actually get a degree in that.
Wow.
And now, obviously, her students at this point are they're 3 and 4 years old. They're not yet reading, but they are doing those soft skills that oftentimes starts really with the social studies curriculum. Right, that notion of how do we get along with one another? How do we learn to share? How do we do those kinds of things? And you think about those skills that transfer beyond that as the students get older into how do we have conversations? And it could be a conversation in their ELA class, right, in their English literature class, or English language arts class, in terms of, well, if we're going to talk about how we view a particular poem or a particular story, how we can have that conversation in a civil and civic manner,
that's
those
right.
are the kind of things that I think are still there and are hugely relevant today. And I think, unfortunately, some of the adults need to spend some time reexamining how we do that.
To go back to your daughter's class and sit there and learn how
right.
to get along
exactly.
with people.
Exactly,
right?
Right? And it was funny. I mean, I walked into her class last year, and I did a couple of days where I would go read to her students, and those kids are wearing masks better. They were wearing masks better
exactly.
than the adults were.
Exactly, of course.
But I think those are the kind of things that are also out there that we also have to keep our eye on to make sure that those kinds of things are not being taken away, and we continue to focus that. In addition to making sure that we're talking about, history and geography and civics and government and all those other good things.
Yeah, that social-emotional learning, just to jump on that, has to be across the board. It can't just be 15 minutes in homeroom. It has to be done
by every
teacher every day. Okay, and that's one of the reasons we started this new site of ours, SEL Today, to kind of engender that and get that information out there, because most of the curriculum companies and most of the educators want that in their classes every day. All right, and I'm not talking about preschool here. I'm talking about K-12. All right, and there's ways to do that, and we're just trying here because it's so important in this day and age. And, you know, you talk about civic discourse. I hate to say it, civic discourse is a soft skill. There's nothing derogatory about soft either. Okay,
nope.
It's a skill that we have to learn. All right, and I'll give you my favorite quote. Somebody who works getting kids in school said, "Every kid I know is hired for their hard skills and fired for their lack of soft skills." So the soft skills ain't so soft. All right, it's that simple. You guys are great. I want to wish you a great conference. Okay, say hello to my wife. Oh, the virtually. Okay, all right, Larry. Okay with that?
Absolutely,
well, Larry. Thanks
we
as always for your support.
Say,
thank you.
A virtual hi, Carol, and you know, and I'll talk to you guys again. We'll talk soon. All right, we're going to talk after the conference as well. Have a good one. Take care. All right, be good, guys.
Thank you, Larry. Take care.
You're
Bye.
Welcome. Bye bye.
Take care. Bye bye.
Bye. Anton Shulsky, who is the president of NCSS, and Larry Paska, their executive director. It's NCSS.org, National Council for the Social Studies. And as mentioned, social studies, social-emotional learning, it's everywhere. It's so important, okay? So let's go with that and make it all happen, okay? We're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thank you for listening.